शांति 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 ओम पार्थाय प्रतिमा। अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी मत्वामनुसंदधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी यम ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्र रुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैस्सांगपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः।
Let us recite these verses from 37.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha
Kama Esha Krodha Esha
Rajo Guna Samudbhava Mahashano Mahapapma विध्येनमिह वैरिणम् धूमेनाव्रियते वह्निः यथादर्शो मलेन च यथोल्बेनावृतो गर्भः तथा तेनेदमावृतम् आवृतं ज्ञानमेतेन ज्ञानिनो नित्यवैरिणा कामरूपेण कौन्तेय दुष्पूरेणानलेन च।
सो लॉर्ड कृष्णा हियर इज giving a discourse on what we call kama, the desire. A desire that shows an inner inadequacy, the desire that shows an inner dissatisfaction, that is what is meant by the word kama or the desire. As we have been saying, a desire is an expression of some want or lack in me. And that sense of want or lack, that I am lacking something, I am wanting something, I am in need of something, and Vedanta explains that very need itself is a product of ignorance, because the true nature of myself is that I am free from all the needs. The truth about myself is that I am a complete being, and therefore when I take myself to be a needy person, that shows that I do not know the true nature of myself. Not only that, but I take myself to be quite different from what I am. So not only I do not know that I am complete or I am a whole being, but then I take myself to be incomplete. This is called ignorance. It is ignorance that causes a desire to become something, to achieve something, to become complete. So all along then the desire behind all the desires is to become complete. Vedanta says that this is a desire that can never be fulfilled. Because one who is complete is trying to be complete, and therefore that can never happen. The one who is the tenth man is trying to search for the tenth man, that can never happen. What I already have I cannot acquire, because it is already there. And therefore that I want to be complete is a wrong premise, that I have to discover that I am completeness. The reason why so much is said against the desire is only because an attempt to fulfill any desire presupposes that I am giving reality to my incompleteness, understand? I cannot have a desire unless I am suffering from a sense of incompleteness. And when I proceed to fulfill the desire, It means that I am giving reality to my sense of incompleteness. Now, as long as I give reality to my sense of incompleteness, that incompleteness can never go. And therefore, it is a endeavor that is doomed to failure, because the desire per se can be fulfilled, but then the desire behind the desire to become complete, that desire can never be fulfilled. And therefore, they're asking us, in fact, to even think about the desire as to what it is that I'm desiring. And when that discernment happens, then of course, I do not give reality to my desire, I do not give reality to at least my sense of incompleteness. This is what Bhagavad Gita teaches us. That do not give reality to sense of incompleteness, because that is not your true nature. Even though you feel incomplete, that feeling is not the truth about you. Now that requires a tremendous boldness to say that, because everybody feels within themselves a sense of incompleteness. That is something very intimately felt, and still Vedanta says that that feeling about you is not right. And thus, taking that feeling to be true, that I am a real incomplete being, and all the attempts to try to become complete always will keep you an incomplete person, because you are taken for granted that you are incomplete. And therefore, this desire is considered to be an obstacle to knowledge. This desire, meaning giving reality to desire. When a desire arises in my mind, and I educate my mind that, look, mind, what do you want to fulfill on this desire? You want something that you do not have, or you want something that you have? If you want something that you do not have, it's okay. But through fulfilling the desire, if you think that you're going to be complete, then that cannot be, because completeness you already have. Thus, we should scrutinize, or we should subject every desire to scrutiny of this discernment. Desire per se is not right or wrong, desire is a desire. To have desire also is not a crime, it's fine. To fulfill desire also is all right. Provided I do it intelligently, that's all. All they ask us is to always be discerning, always be intelligent. Understand that? Yes, there are many things that we do need, no doubt about that, to sustain our life, and it's quite all right to fulfill those desires for sustaining my life. But if through the fulfillment of desire, I expect that I will be more complete, or I'll be happier than what I am, well, that cannot be. So, this is where we are asked to scrutinize the desire. But whenever my sense of want or incompleteness is in reality, then desire also becomes real for me. So therefore Lord Krishna says that it is this desire that really veils my true nature. Or desire veils the knowledge of the true nature. Otherwise I am a complete being, I should know that I am complete. Why is it that I do not know? Unfortunately, I'm always looking for completeness somewhere else, and therefore, that we're looking for somewhere else. This is what we call extrovertedness, meaning that my mind being directed to something else in search of happiness or completeness, it is that very extrovertedness that is an obstacle to discovering that the completeness I am. I cannot be simultaneously looking somewhere else and looking at myself also, and therefore, in order for me to look at myself, and to understand the teaching of Vedanta also, Vedanta teaching can be understood provided I am looking at myself. And looking at myself can happen only when at least my mind becomes free from the preoccupation of things other than me. In that sense, this karma or desire is said to be a great obstacle. This description may sound as though the Vedanta or Gita is opposed to desire. It is not so. All that Gita is asking us to do is to understand the desire. Vedanta never rejects anything, it always asks us to understand things. And after understanding, I know that I will only pursue that which is really useful to me, and I will let go of that which is not useful to me. But very often, what is not really useful to me is unfortunately thought to be useful, and therefore I am pursuing a lot of things which I later on discover that that is not what I wanted. So before that happens, let every desire be subjected to scrutiny. But as I said, that's the reason why it is said that this desire, in fact, veils the true knowledge. Avrutam jnanam etena. It is by this desire that my discriminative knowledge, that I could discover my true nature, that very opportunity or that very condition that is required, very background that is required, the very situation that is required for me to discover that itself is denied on account of desire. So, desiring is one orientation and self-discovery is another orientation. So, as long as I am oriented towards fulfilling my desire, so long I am not oriented towards discovering myself. As long as I am looking at you, I could not be looking at something else. So also, as long as because of the desire I am looking at the objects of desire, so long I could not be looking at myself. And therefore, these are two mutually exclusive orientations. That's all that Vedanta wants to draw our attention to, that whenever I am preoccupied with the thought of the object of desire, at that time I cannot be dwelling upon myself. In order for me to dwell upon myself, to contemplate upon myself, to understand myself also, it is necessary that my mind should be focused upon myself. And further, it is necessary that the mind should be free from its preoccupation with the objects of desire. And therefore Lord Krishna says, kama rupena kaunteya dushpurena analena cha. Here Arjuna, the desire can never be satisfied. It looks like a given desire is satisfied, but then a desire immediately gives rise to another desire in its wake, and therefore a desire can be satisfied, but desire per se cannot be satisfied, meaning that in spite of satisfying any number of desires, you will still remain a desirer. That means that the desirer will never go in spite of fulfilling any number of desires. That is dushpurana, which is insatiable. This desire is an insatiable fellow, like a bottomless pit. He keeps on coming with different demands. You keep on fulfilling demands, and so his demands will never be fulfilled. Analayana cha, he will never say alam, he will never say enough. Like fire never says enough, so also desire will never say enough. Give him what you will, he will never say enough. More you give, more in fact desire, more he demanding he becomes. It is most amazing thing that this very fundamental thing about our life, people just don't pay attention, they don't notice it at all. This is most fundamental. That even though so many desires are fulfilled, how come the desirer is not satiated? How come the beggar is not gone? How come the desire remains intact? That person never thinks. As desires occur in the mind, they just keep on fulfilling them. Unfortunately, the psychologists also give reality to the mind and give reality. For them, mind is a self. And therefore, desire is something that is real, and therefore, you should fulfill it. And therefore Vedanta sometimes come across as something which is unnatural, because we think that to desire is natural. Vedanta says that desire itself is unnatural. Natural thing is that you are complete, and therefore there cannot be desire in the wake of your true nature. Alright, now Arjuna is a warrior, and this desire has been now declared as an enemy number one, so he wants to know where is this enemy hiding, what are his hideouts, so that I can search him out and I can destroy him. So, 40th verse, the next verse, tells us what are the places where this desire is, where he lives, where are his hideouts.
Indriyani mano buddhi asya adhishthana mucyate etair vimohayatyesha jnanamavrutya dehinam. Indriyani manaha buddhi asya adhishthana mucyate. Adhishthana means seat. Here adhishthana means a seat or a dwelling place. Or you can say it's hideout. So indriyani, this kama or the desire, has three dwelling places. Indriyani, sense organs. By sense organs we mean the organs of perception generally, sometimes organs of action also. Then manaha, the mind also is where the desire is located. And buddhi, the intellect also is where it is located. So this desire has three places, or three dwelling places: the sense organs, the mind, and the intellect.
To distinguish these two faculties, mind and intellect, intellect is the knowing faculty. Intellect is the faculty with which we know and with which we decide, with which we judge, with which we conclude, with which we decide, that is called intellect. And that faculty with which we feel, we receive the stimuli, we react with the stimuli, that with which we feel, that faculty is called manaha, and that is where all the habitual impulses are also there. An impulsive faculty, reacting faculty, feeling faculty, receiving the stimuli, the perceiving faculty, and also sending back the reactions. So receiving the stimuli and responding, this faculty is a mind. So sense organs with which we perceive. So as you know very well how the perception takes place is, when my organ of perception, such as eyes, comes in contact with an object having color or form, and my mind is behind the eyes, that is when the perception takes place or a cognition takes place. So for cognition to take place, all the faculties are required. Then my intellect decides, hey, this is flower, such and such flower. This is a pot, this is a man, this is whatever. So when I decide this, all the faculties are involved. My sense organs of perception came in contact with object. My mind received the stimuli, and my intellect, with the memories that I have, the intellect decides what this object is. So indriyani, manaha, buddhihi, the sense organs, the mind and the intellect. So these are the faculties with which we perceive and with which we react. Then intellect decides what to do with this knowledge, piece of information. Hey, this person has come. So my eyes see the person, my mind receives that stimuli and tells the intellect. Then intellect decides, hey, this is my friend. Oh, this is my foe, whatever. And then intellect decides what to do. So when there is a doorbell, you know, the bell rings, I look through that little thing, you know, peephole. And so who is he? My friend. That's what the intellect decides, my friend. Then intellect says to the mind, okay, open the door. Mind says to the hands, come on, hands, open the door. So that's how the communication takes place. Door is opened. If somebody I don't like. It's interesting, you know, recently we were in Connecticut, we went to see a place called Gillette. There was a man whose name was Gillette, not this blade, etc., but this was a great actor, you know. He was always performing roles of Sherlock Holmes. And he was a very wealthy person in Connecticut, on the Connecticut River, in a very beautiful location. He has built a mansion. He must be crazy also to some extent. He was a great person. But he had all kinds of mirrors from where he could see. So he's sitting here and there is a mirror. From there he could see who is entering there, you know. So mirror is so angled that he sees who is coming into the gate downstairs. And he will decide whether he wants to see that person or not, you know. He'll decide. Or suppose he's sitting in his study room where he cannot see that person. Then there was a code word with his servants. So the servants say, Mr. Gillette, so and so has come. So this person knows that I don't want to meet him. So servant is as though indicating him that you would not want to meet him. So then Gillette immediately runs out. He had another door through which he will run out and say, I'm not in, you know. But all this is done. In order to do these things, all the faculties are involved. Intellect is involved, the mind is involved, and sense organs are involved. First, who has come? The organs of perception are involved. Then running away, whatever, organs of action are involved. So this is how all our interaction takes place. The desire is located in all the three places. Indriyani, mano buddhi, astya adhisthanam uchyate. Just to remind you of a very beautiful imagery given by Kathopanishad. In Kathopanishad it is said that we have a chariot with us, which is given to us in order to perform the journey of the life. Atmanam rasinam vidhi, shariram rasamevatu, indriyani hayanahuhu. They say that this body is like a chariot. The sense organs of perception are like the horses. The mind is in the place of the rein. Intellect is in the place of the chariot here. And you and I, what we call the ego, are the masters of chariot, meaning riding the chariot. Except that the master does not have freedom. He is a charioteer who decides where the chariot will go. He has to choose the path, so he comes across intersections and the charioteer has to decide. And the charioteer should have knowledge of where he wants to go and what's the path leading there. Then alone he can make proper choices. If he doesn't have that knowledge, or he has false knowledge, he'll make wrong choices. So, the body is a chariot, the sense organs are the horses, the mind is a rein, intellect is a charioteer. Now Lord Krishna says, all these three fellows are under the influence of Kama. See, Kama is declared as an enemy number one. He is under his influence, sense organs, meaning the horses, the manaha, the mind, meaning the rein, and buddhi, meaning the charioteer. That means that I am riding a chariot, but my charioteer, the reins in his hand, and the horses, all of these are controlled by my enemy. Imagine. Because there are two choices to be made in our life, Shreyas and Priyas, or Rama and Kama, meaning that either we seek the eternal happiness, or we seek what we call just the happiness coming from the immediate gratification. So two choices are always there, either seek immediate gratification or delay the immediate gratification and work for what we call the eternal gratification. Either there is a short-term gain or immediate gratification or a long-term gain. These two choices are there in our life and every moment we have to make a choice. Except that when I choose what I call the eternal happiness or the long-term gain, I have to let go the short-term gain. I cannot have both of them, unfortunately. I cannot have immediate gratification as well as the eternal gratification. Shreyas and prayers, one of the two choices. What will this desire do, you know? Desire will always prompt you to make choice of immediate gratification. That's what desire will do. So thus, whenever I choose immediate gratification, I deprive myself. Whenever we go for immediate, in our life also, when we go for immediate gains, very often we compromise our values, for example, or violate the values because of our temptations and go for immediate gains. But then, there is a violation of a value and thus I am depriving myself of what we call the long-term or the everlasting gain. So lasting gain and immediate gain, these two choices are there. What is called Kama? Kama is that impulse in me which prompts me to make choice for immediate gain, and that is how it deprives me of the benefit of the lasting gain. Unfortunately, immediate gain seems to be very tempting and therefore very pleasant, seems to be very sweet, except that ultimately it turns out to be very bitter. And the lasting gain seems to be very bitter in the beginning, but turns out to be sweet at the end. That means that when we are committed to our values and committed to our principles, then it's possible that we have to let go of our, overcome our temptation and therefore let go of the immediate gratification which we have gained due to temptations. And it's painful. But if I am willing to suffer that pain, then I am creating the crown for gaining what we call the lasting satisfaction. So Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also that there is one kind of pleasure which appears to be very sweet in the beginning but turns out to be bitter at the end. There is another kind of pleasure which appears to be bitter in the beginning turns out to be like nectar at the end. So these two choices are there. What is Kama or the desire always makes me go for immediate gain, makes me go for the immediate gratification. And that is the force which very often makes me in fact violate my values, because then only you can get the immediate gain. The immediate gratification comes usually when you violate a value, when you don't follow discipline. If you follow discipline, if you follow the values, then perhaps the gratification will come at some time. So thus imagine that you are on a journey with a full trust on your chariot and a driver. You are riding a motor car, a cab for example, with a trust on the driver, except the driver is controlled by your enemy. And therefore, where is he going to take you? To naturally the wrong destination. So similarly also, if our life is controlled by what we call this karma, meaning ignorance, Desire means ignorance, or it means what you call aviveka, lack of discrimination, wrong perception. If our life is controlled by the false perception, then we can never hope to gain or achieve the destination of our life. That's all what Lord Krishna is saying. So indriyani, manaha, buddhihi, the sense organs, the mind, the intellect, asya kamasya adhisthana muchyate, they are declared to be his dwelling places, his seat. And what does he do? Etaihi vimohayati esha jnanam avrutya dehinam. Esha, this kama sitting in those three places. They jnanam avrutya, veiling the knowledge, veiling his sense of discrimination, meaning veiling the right choice. So what the desire does is that it veils my faculty of making choices correctly and in fact makes me do the wrong choices. That's what the kama does. If I made the right choices, I would have been moving in the direction of my goal. What the kama, the desire does is it makes me make the wrong choices. Meaning, it creates a value where it is not. So when my mind is filled with a desire, then I always see the virtues of something that is a desirable object, you know. When I desire something, I only see the virtues of that thing, never see what is the defect associated with that. When I hate something, all I see are just the limitations and the faults associated with that. I never see the virtue. And when I am attached to something, all I see are the virtue and never the faults. But a thing has both virtues as well as faults. There is nothing in the creation that is perfect, and therefore everything has its faults or limitations. Nothing is useless, therefore everything has virtues as well. And the right thing is to evaluate something by recognizing both the virtues as well as faults. Now when you have seen it, then you are an objective person. Then you can make a proper decision. But this kama, the desire, in fact affects very objectivity. When it's said that it veils the knowledge, it veils my objectivity and makes my perception one-sided, lopsided. Either I see just virtues of something, which may not be there. My mind imposes the virtues. Very often this kama or the desire makes my mind superimpose or project the virtues which are not there, and then I want them. Opposite, what it does is that it makes me, what I do not want, it makes me project the faults or defects where they are not there. So this is what our mind can do. Our mind, more often than not, lives only in imaginary world. It does not see the world or objects as they are. Either it superimposes virtues upon, projects virtues upon them, or projects defects or faults upon them. In that sense, we say that the kama or the desire veils our discerning mind, veils our the objectivity of the mind. That's all it does, then its job is done. Because once I think that this kama makes me see the thing other than what it is, then mind says I want it, and intellect says have it. You see, this only when all the three are involved that an action will be performed. Even when the mind says I want something, intellect says no, I don't think that your desire is right, my mind. I think that, see, these are the problems there. You see these virtues, but you have failed to see these problems in there also. If intellect makes the mind see both the good and bad aspects, then the desire may be resolved. But this kama, the desire, controls my intellect also. And therefore intellect comes up with the rational, with the kind of reasoning, yes, this is the right thing to do. So that is how the sense organs, the mind, as well as the intellect, all these are influenced by the kama or the desire. Etaihi esha vimohayati. Remaining in these three places, this kama or the desire deludes this fellow. Who? The rider, the charioteer, the master is deluded. Charioteer says, this is, I say, hey, we have to go that way. Charioteer says, no, Swami, you have to go that way, you know, the driver. And he convinces me that is what to do. That's how I make decisions, as influenced by this kama or the desire, which is a product of ignorance and which is a product of aviveka or non-discrimination.
How do you say that the desire is in all the three places? First of all, in my sense organs, the desire is there as impulses. I see something and I want it. You know, I see some candy, I want to eat it. I see a car, I want to have it. So this kind of impulse which is there is built into our sense organs. Mind, so this is one thing. Second is in the mind, which has tremendous amount of emotional needs also, and therefore this desire also makes me a needy person, creates in me these emotional needs. And intellect, the desire also comes up with the wrong arguments to justify something which may not be really beneficial to me. In this sense, the kama or desire is said to be located in these three places. And then what should you do? Lord Krishna says in the next verse.
Tasmat tvamindriyanyadau niyamya bharatarshabha paapmanam prajahihyenam jnana vijnana nashanam. Enam jnana vijnana nashanam paapmanam prajahi.
See, if you look at the translation is not the best translation in the world, but anyway, because I have given you this handout, because this handout has the transliteration. The Devanagari is there and transliteration is there, therefore we are using, but the translation is not always the best, you know, but this evil thing which obstructs the knowledge. Jnana vijnana nashanam. We have jnanam as well as vijnanam. These two things are there. Jnanam means understanding and vijnanam means this assimilated understanding. To know that I should speak truth is one thing, and then when that value gets assimilated, that is what we call vijnanam. The knowledge and assimilated knowledge. Or knowledge and experience, this is called jnanam and vijnanam. Meaning that I have assimilated certain values in my life. I know that speaking truth is beneficial to me. I know that non-violent, I have a value for the values. So jnanam can be called the value and vijnanam can be called the value of the value. That means I know the values of the life, at the same time I know the values, all of these I know. But when a desire takes hold of my mind, this understanding as well assimilation, all of this seems to be relegated to the background. That is the kind of power that this kama and the krodha have. We know that when my mind gets overcome by anger, then even though I understand everything, and under normal conditions I do those things also, but when overcome by desire or anger or greed, etc., then my knowledge and wisdom is of no use to me. That kind of power this anger has, or that kind of power this desire or craving has. That at that time my wisdom also is of no use. Jnanam and vijnanam. Understanding as well as wisdom, if you want to distinguish between the two. Meaning that I not only have understanding, but an assimilated understanding. Under normal conditions, that is what I would do. But then this kama, the desire, has the capacity even to distort that understanding and in fact make me take the wrong decisions. So jnana vijnana nasham. Lord Krishna says that recognize that this fellow is your enemy. He comes very smilingly as your friend, but in fact he is your enemy. Recognize it. Only when you recognize it, that is when we will want to remove it. So when we recognize how the desire and the anger and the greed, etc., how in fact they deprive us of all the wisdom that we have. When they take hold of our mind, how at that time the wisdom is not available to me. When anger takes hold of my mind, that time my mind gets totally, has a distorted perception, and what is wrong appears to be right, what is right appears to be wrong. And so whenever I make a decision as prompted by anger or as greed or lust, it is invariably going to be a wrong decision, it's going to be a violent decision. So when I recognize that, then I will not give reality to the anger and to the desire and to the greed, etc. So Lord Krishna says, enam paapmanam. This fellow is an evil fellow.
Papmanam is that which makes me perform all kinds of evil things. That in fact which makes me violate my own values. So recognize this kama to be so and so.
Then jahi or prajahi. Jahi means kill. Prajahi means give up. So here, give up this desire.
Give up the desire recognizing that he is your enemy.
How do I do, Swami? What do I do about this desire? Lord Krishna here says, tasmātvam indriyāṇyādu niyamya bhartarśava.
The first step of giving up desire is control. Not the ultimate step, the first step is control. In Vedanta we call it damaha, indriya nigraha, meaning controlling my sense organs. Thus there is a strong desire in my mind. My intellect says, yes, that is the way to do. My mind says, yes, do that. And still, I can assert myself, I can assert my self-discipline, and I can say that no, this is not going to happen. The anger has arisen in me, what do I do immediately? Self-control. Recognizing that the anger is in fact my enemy, and therefore I decide, I am not going to allow the anger to express itself as action. Because it's kama, krodha, lobha, whether it is desire, anger or greed, it can do the harm, maximum harm, when it is expressed as an action. As long as I contain it within myself, it can do some harm to me, but at least it will not do any harm outside of me. So first thing is control. As we said, that this control comes out of a conviction. It is not suppression, so there is a difference between discipline and suppression. We call it discipline when it is done with an understanding. You call it suppression when it is done without understanding or done out of helplessness. So it is not that I am capable of fulfilling my desire. I am capable of expressing my anger also. But I decide not to do, recognizing that it hurts me. So indriyani adu niyamya. You will control your sense organs. Secondly, work with your mind. And thirdly, work with the intellect. When your mind comes up with any desire, then as I said, reason with the mind. The mind has a tendency, when it wants something, it only sees the good aspects of something. It only sees the virtues. At that time, dosha darshanam, I make my mind show the dosha, the guna and dosha, virtues and defects. So by simply dwelling upon the virtues of something, my mind wants it. I deliberately make my mind see also the vices, meaning the faults or the defects or the pain associated with that. So this is how I work with my mind. And dosha darshanam, dosha drishtya muhur muhu, this is what we are taught, that let the mind make the mind see the doshas, the loss associated with it, the pain associated with it. Third is intellect. Intellect is very clever. It comes up with justification for fulfilling a desire. Then I make the intellect also. I work with my intellect. I make my intellect see that, look, a desire is, it arises out of a sense of inadequacy. Look, intellect, the sense of inadequacy is a wrong conclusion on your part. Intellect is the concluding faculty. It is judging faculty. It has judged the self to be incomplete and therefore it justifies a desire. I make my intellect see that, look, your conclusion that you are incomplete is a wrong conclusion. Niyamya, at all the three levels, because these are three locations where the desire is located, and therefore when there is an impulse in my sense organs to do something, I stop it there. When my mind comes up with a desire, I make the mind see the dosha darshanam, the negative aspects associated with fulfilling a desire. When my intellect comes with justifying desire, I make my intellect see viveka, discrimination. So, atma, anatma, viveka. Look, atma, the self, is complete. There is no scope for desire in knowledge of complete self, and therefore this desire is illegitimate. It's not a legitimate thing. To intellect, I show the illegitimacy of desire. To the mind, I show the negative aspects associated with fulfilling desire. To my sense organs, I establish a self-control. This is how Niyamya Bhartarshava. Hey Bhartarshava, hey Arjuna, thus at all the three levels, may you exercise this kind of control. Apply the appropriate means at every level. At level of sense organs, discipline. Level of mind, reasoning. Level of intellect, understanding. So, Jahi, you give up this desire. Give up your enemy. But this is not the ultimate solution. Ultimate solution is to discover that you are the complete self. Until then, the desire will keep on coming back and you keep doing this exercise. Until this knowledge is gained, it is... Somebody asked me, Swami, is there a sadhana in Vedanta? Everywhere else you go, they tell you what to do. They tell you to do, wake up at this time and then do this thing, then do this chanting, then do this yoga and do this pranayama and do various things. Is there any sadhana in Vedanta? Vedantins don't ask you to do anything. Whether it is yoga, pranayama, worship. What is Vedantic sadhana? This is Vedantic sadhana. All the time working with our mind. Whenever mind comes up with any desires, anger, notions, conclusions, we subject those things to the scrutiny of understanding which we have gained from the teaching of Vedanta. Inasmuch as Vedanta addresses our intellect, because Vedanta makes us see the fact that the problem is only in the understanding. It is wrong understanding which is the cause of all the problems, and right understanding is that which will resolve all the problems. And therefore the Vedanta addresses our understanding. And therefore, the wrong understanding must be all the time addressed with the right understanding. That is Vedantic sadhana. How do I know that my understanding is wrong? When I find my mind desiring something, I know it is from wrong understanding. Why, Swamiji? Because desire shows that the mind has concluded that I am a needy person. What's wrong with that? But the neediness is a wrong conclusion, because in fact, in reality, you are free from all the needs. This is sadhana. All the time. Look at your mind. Look at the thoughts. Look at the conclusion. That's all. So wrong conclusion, which is the cause of all the suffering, is the right conclusion, which is the solution. And therefore, any thought is a result of a conclusion. Particular desire is a result of a conclusion. And therefore, a desire shows a certain conclusion. Find out what that conclusion is. Address that. Any notion about myself is a conclusion. That I am happy is a conclusion. I am unhappy is a conclusion. I am father is a conclusion. I am mother is a conclusion. Address that. Why do you say you are mother? Well, I am mother. Oh, mother is the nature of this body. It's an identity with body that you say you are mother, you are father. That is what we call Annamaya Kosha. That shows identity with the body. I am unhappy. But that's the state of the mind. It's an identity with the mind that you are saying this. I am failure. That's the nature of the intellect. It's identity with the intellect that you are saying this. Every time mind comes up with something, don't just let it go. Don't act upon it. Before I act upon any idea, I must scrutinize the validity of that idea, validity of the conclusion. That is the Vedantic sadhana, you know. Because Vedanta means understanding. And therefore, is all the time to gain the understanding from the teacher and to keep on applying that understanding at the level of every conclusion that I have. That's Vedantic sadhana. If you do that, you have done whatever you need to do. Swamiji, but I can't do it all the time. Then do prayers. That also I can't do. Then do puja. I can't do that. Then do japa. All right. Then do pranayama. That also I can't do yogasana. Everything is fine. Other things are done so that you can do this. So it's not that we are rejecting any means. We should know the place that everything has. Ultimately, what is Vedantic sadhana is asserting the right, gaining the right understanding and asserting the right understanding. For gaining the understanding, we may need a lot of things. So when I can't sit, then do yogasanas. You know, do something. I don't have any attention span. Then do some concentration thing, do some japa. Swamiji, everything goes overhead, all right? Then work with your intellect, you know, develop certain ability to understand things. Swami, this Sanskrit, then learn grammar. So all of these are required. All of these things come basically what we need to do is to gain understanding. Swami, is necessary that I should have Sanskrit? Not necessary. Nothing is necessary. Understanding is necessary. That's all. If you read Sanskrit, fine. If you don't, doesn't matter. If you can get without it, no problem. Do I have to do a given thing? You just need understanding. So understand what Vedanta teaches. Therefore, everybody may need different things. What I'm saying is that somebody needs this thing, somebody else may need something else. That is the reason why we have to discover what we need with reference to our own self. What is being said is in a general, broad spectrum thing. Which one applies to me, I must see and accordingly. But ultimate goal is, as I said, right understanding. With that, hey Arjuna, inasmuch as the kama, the desire, is a product of wrong understanding, apply the right understanding. But sometimes wrong understanding has gone on so long, it has become habituated. So without thinking, then I do things. At that time, apply yoga. Meaning that, you make your mind dosha drishtya, then dosha drishti comes. So at the level of understanding of intellect, right understanding. Habit of the mind, so when one thing is done wrongly a number of times, it becomes habit. Then, ask the mind, make it dosha darshanam. Let him see the dosha. Let him see the defects. Let him see the pain and the cost that you... It's not that you can fulfill your desire and enjoy something, you have to pay the price. What's the price? Let it see that. And at the level of sense organs, it is at the level of impulse. At the level of intellect, it is wrong understanding. At the level of mind, it's habitually under the wrong understanding. At the level of sense organs, it is impulse. At each level, you would apply an appropriate means to be able to contain what we call this karma. We can go pretty far with this, but not all the way. With this also, you cannot go all the way. How do you go all the way? Next verse tells us that.
Indriyani paranyahuh. Indriyebhyah param manah. Manasastu para buddhi. Yo buddheh paratastu sah.
So now that we have gained a fair amount of control over all the faculties, the impulses in my sense organs have been very well dealt with. The habits in my mind also are very well dealt with. The understanding of the intellect also is dealt with by what we just discussed earlier. By doing that for a very long time, when my mind has now become relatively free from desire, then I apply the Brahmastra, the final tool I apply. What is it? Atmanatma Viveka. Ultimately, desire will go only when I discover the completeness which is my nature. To discover the total contentment with myself is the final solution for the elimination of desire finally and ultimately, so that it doesn't come back. As long as I feel incomplete in within me, the desire will come back in one form or the other. And I will have to continue to work with it. Ultimate answer is to discover that completeness is my nature. How do I do that? By creating a distance. With what? With the non-self. But to create the distance, to discriminate between self and non-self requires a mind enjoying a very high measure of composure. So therefore, what Lord Krishna said in the verse 41, when we do that, and by that we have made our mind essentially free from desire, then we have the composure to be able to create a distance between my body, my sense organs, my mind, my intellect, and recognize that, in fact, I am the one that is different from all of that. Recognize that completeness or wholeness or ananda is my nature. So indriyani paranyahu, they say the sense organs are parani, greater, superior, subtler. Sense organs are subtler than the body. You see, we say gross and subtle. Gross is that which can be perceived through sense organs. Subtle means that which we cannot perceive through sense organs. This body is called gross body because we perceive it through our sense organs. The mind is called subtle because we cannot perceive the mind through sense organs. So what is subtle is superior to the gross. The subtle always controls the gross. The gross may be very powerful all right, like an elephant, but the human being who is subtler in intellect and skill can control that. Therefore, what is superior is the one that controls is called superior. One is subtler, that is superior to the gross. The controller is superior to what is controlled. What is inside is superior to what is outside, you know. Usually in an office structure also, the boss will be usually inside, you know. Everybody else will be outside. The secretaries, you know, all they are all outside. You go through them and then you go to the boss. He's inside. Even this is how we arrange also. So what is inside is superior to what is outside. One who has more power is superior to one who has less power. One who is smarter is superior to one who is less smart, you know. So this kind of hierarchy is given within our own personality. Hierarchy. I am the body also. But then I am not always the body, so I can step back one step. So here Lord Krishna says that we cannot give up identification in one stroke, but we can give identification progressively. Indriyani paranyahu. I identify myself with sense organs and then I can say that this body I am not. First I identify the body and say that the world I am not. So that is very easy. That's right. Let us start with that. Sava esha purusho narasamayaha, says the Iti Upanishad. What's the first definition of Atma, the Self? Annarasamaya purusha. This body, made of the modification of food, is a self. Even that also is knowledge, that I am the body. You know what it does? That means I am not my motor car, I am not my house, I am not my son, I am not my spouse, I am not my wealth. Because we get identified there also. You see, what happens is that sometimes we get identified with what we possess and we forget ourselves. Therefore, recognition that the body I am also is an achievement, that means I am very clear that those things I am not. First knowledge. The indriyani paranyahu. Second level of knowledge is that, no, this body I am not, because body is not independent. Body is always controlled. My sense organs control what the body does. And therefore, the legs will control where the body goes. The hands will control what the body does, and thus, between body and the sense organs of perception or sense organs of action, it is very clear that the sense organs are controlling and body is controlled. So body is controlled by the sense organs. So what controls is superior to what is controlled. Also body is gross, sense organs are subtle because I cannot see them. What is subtle is superior to what is gross. What is more pervasive is superior to what is less pervasive. What is more greater territory, greater jurisdiction is superior to the one who has less jurisdiction, you know. Sense organs have much greater jurisdiction. Body is confined to one place, while eyes can see what is there, ears can hear what is far away, and that way the sense organs have much greater jurisdiction. Therefore, they are superior. So my next identification is with the sense organs. I'm a speaker, I'm hearer, I'm seer, I'm thinker. No, not think seer, hearer. Next identification. That also is a knowledge. It's at some point. At least I'm not the body. I'm the one that guides the body. I'm the seer of the body. I'm hearer of the body. I see the body. Who am I? I'm seer of the body. I can hear the body, I am hearer of the body. I can touch the body, I am toucher of the body. I can smell the body, smeller of the body. Taste the body, taster of the body. That's true also, isn't it? And therefore, who am I? Taster, toucher, smeller. That's next level of knowledge. Now understand, I am free.
My freedom, the score of freedom is increased now. When I say I am the body, I am free from the identification of the things outside the body. That is freedom. When I say I am sense organs, then I become that much free from the limitations of body. Third is indriyebhyah param manah. As compared to sense organs, the mind is superior. Because the mind controls the sense organs. Mind says, hands, come on, rise, then rise. Mind says, eyes, look, then eyes, look. Mind says, come on, ears, hear. So sometimes sitting in the class also, if something is happening outside, mind says, what's happening there? Instead of listening to Swami, I'm tuned up with what's happening there. Or through the windows, glass windows, you see something, you know. And therefore the mind says, hey, what's there? Some bird is pecking there, is there? Everybody's eyes will go there. Mind says, come and look there. Mind says, hear that one. Hear that bird. Look at that bird. If somebody passes by, everybody's eyes will go like that. So somebody gets up from here, then we will escort him all the way up to the door. No? Because the mind says to the eyes, look there. So thus it is our experience that the sense organs in fact are controlled by the mind. The one that controls is superior to the one who is controlled. One that has more pervasiveness is superior to one that has less pervasiveness. One that is inside, internal, is superior to what is external. So mind is inside, superior. Mind has a much greater scope or much greater variety, jurisdiction, much greater pervasiveness. Mind is controller of sense organs, therefore the mind is superior. I step back now. From the world, I step back to the body. The body, I step back to sense organs. From there, I step back to my mind. Identify, I am mind. Emotional, I am. Feeler, I am. Perceiver, I am. So when I say I am perceiver, these organs of perception are the means of perception, you know. The eyes, ears, all the faculties are the means of perception. Who am I? I am the one who uses those means. Like, I am not my computer, I use the computer. Similarly also, there are all these various computers or various instruments that I have. Who am I? I am the user, I am the perceiver. The organs of action I am not. Who am I? I am the performer of action. I use the organs of action to perform actions. I use the organs of perception to perceive. Who am I? I am perceiver. I am experiencer. I am doer. Next level of identification. Manasastu para buddhihi. But superior to the mind is intellect. Because intellect is that, the decisions of the intellect in fact control the feelings of the mind also. Whatever the mind feels ultimately is based on whatever understanding the intellect has. Intellect, the understanding faculty, the judging faculty, the deciding faculty, the intellect decides and the mind follows the decisions. And then the mind tells the sense organs to do something. And the sense organs drag the body wherever it is to be dragged, you know. And that is how intellect, the judging faculty, deciding faculty, understanding faculty, is superior to even the mind, the emotional faculty or projecting faculty. Who am I? I am the knower. Pramataham, I am the knower. I am the thinker. I am the decider. I am the judge, whatever. That's what I am. So see, I am stepping back from grosser to subtler, from inferior to superior. Yo buddhe paratastu saha. But here Lord Krishna says, there is someone who is superior to even buddhi, the intellect also. There is someone who even illumines the intellect. The intellect also knows. Intellect also is in fact made of only five elements, the matter. Intellect also is inert. And that intellect glows with the faculty of understanding that doesn't belong to the intellect, it is also borrowed. Like the bulb is glowing, the filament is glowing, but it's not glowing because of its own light, it is because of the energy borrowed from electricity. So intellect also performs the function of understanding.
performs the function of knowing. Intellect also functions as though it is a conscious entity. But the consciousness is not the nature of intellect. Intellect, in fact, functions on what we call reflected consciousness, the borrowed consciousness. This morning we gave the example of a little gadget which is stuck on the window and receives sunlight. Then sun powers that little panel, solar panel, and that's how the gadget starts turning and rotating. But the turning and rotating of the gadget is not on account of itself. It is on account of the energy that is borrowed from the sun. And similarly also, the intellect functions as though it's a conscious entity. If you do not know, because you don't see any electricity connected there, you think that the crystal is rotating by itself. In the olden days, we had a music box, I really miss that music box now and then, but the music box also was like, it had also a solar panel. But the good thing about the music box was that you could hold it against any light, and that little panel would be charged, and then all things will start turning inside, and the drums and then the box will start playing music. So the one who does not understand, a child will think that the box is playing music. But we are wise people, we know that the box does not play the music. Box, in fact, plays music. The wheels are rotating inside, the drums are banging inside, all against the borrowed energy, against borrowed consciousness, is enlivened. This musical box is enlivened by the light. So life that the music box shows doesn't belong to itself, it is borrowed, it is reflected. So also the intellect functions as though it's an intelligent entity, it's a conscious entity, but the consciousness is borrowed. Who is the one that imparts consciousness to intellect? Who enlivens the intellect? Yo buddhev paratastu saha. That which is superior to intellect also, because of which the intellect also enlivened, because of which the intellect also has become conscious. Now I have to step back further. So the last verse is,
evam buddhev param buddhva samstabhyatmanam atmana जहि शत्रुं महाबाहो कामरूपं दुरासदम्
एवं बुद्धेः परम बुद्ध्वा. इन दिस मैनर हे अर्जुना, नोइंग द वन दैट इज सुपीरियर टू द इंटेलेक्ट, सो दैट बिकॉज ऑफ विच इंटेलेक्ट इज कॉन्शियस, दैट इज इम्पार्ट्स कॉन्शियसनेस टू इंटेलेक्ट, दैट विच इज द इल्यूमिनेटर ऑफ इंटेलेक्ट, दैट विच इज द विटनेस ऑफ द इंटेलेक्ट, that which is a self of the nature of pure knowledge, in presence of which the intellect performs its functions. Buddha, knowing that to be a true nature. So in the beginning, I know the body as myself. Second step, I know the sense organs as myself. Then I know the mind as myself. Then I know the intellect as myself. Intellect means ego. Finally, Swami, who knows all of this? So far ego was knowing all of this. Now I recognize myself as a very self of the ego also. What's the nature of this knower? The final designation is, I am the knower. What's the nature of knower? What is that knower made up of? I am the knower. What's the knower made up of? We say the sun is the illuminator. What's the nature of sun that illumines? Light is the nature of the sun that illumines. Similarly also, knowledge is the nature of the knower. Knowledge or consciousness is the nature of the knower. And therefore, give up that. This is like shedding off the clothes or shedding off the costumes one after the other. Final costume was, or final role was, I am the knower. Even the knowerness also is a role which comes from identification of the intellect when I let that also go. I'm not the knower also. Then what's the nature of knower? The knowledge is the nature of the knower. Knowledge I am. Consciousness I am. Then I recognize that there is no boundary at all. The consciousness, knowledge is no boundary at all. The intellect has boundaries. The ego has the boundaries. But when that identification also is let go, then I discover myself that
I am the illuminator of not only this body, but everything. In fact, the consciousness has no limit at all. There is no form, there is no weight, there is no shape. All forms and all weights and all shapes are illumined by the consciousness, which itself is without the forms, without any boundaries. Who am I? I am that boundless consciousness. Evam buddhe param buddhva, thus recognizing your true nature as consciousness, as intelligence, as very existence, as asti bhati priyam, as the very love, as very existence, as very intelligence. Then you find that you have no boundaries at all. All the boundaries are within you. You are boundless, recognizing yourself as a boundless consciousness, boundless intelligence, or boundless love, which is the same as the boundless happiness, recognizing yourself as the boundless happiness, limitless happiness. Then there is no need to seek happiness at all. Is it not so? So the point here is that when you recognize the superior, then the thirst for the inferior goes away. That is called the growth in our life also. That we slowly grow and gaining the capacity to derive joy from subtler things, then the need to derive joy from the grosser thing will drop off. So, when you discover the joy of what we call light classical music, then you are free from the noisy film music, etc. When you derive joy of pure classical music, then that also drops off. Derive joy from devotional music, that also goes off. Derive joy from very devotion, that is how, as you derive joy from subtler things, how the crutches of the need, dependent upon the gross, just drops off. So Lord Krishna is teaching here this process of letting go or dropping. By successfully identifying with the subtler and subtler aspect of our being, until I identify with the subtlest nature of myself, which is wholeness or completeness, which is consciousness, which is boundless, then I recognize myself as self-sufficient. So every level my sufficiency increases, understand? As I identify with the subtler aspect of myself, I discover myself to be a more and more sufficient person. A more and more comfortable person with myself, and thus I grow in the degree of self-sufficiency and self-comfort, ultimately, sa-kāṣṭha, sa-parāgatihi, that is the parākāṣṭha, meaning the culmination of discovering in self-comfort is that I discover myself totally comfortable. It's a process of discovery. It's not that only when I recognize the consciousness of myself, that is when I find myself sufficient, but as I said, there is a discovery of self-sufficiency. And I progressively discover myself more and more sufficient, more and more content, until I discover that I am contentment myself, I am the sufficiency myself. Then the very desire goes away. Kim icchan kasya kamaya shariram anusanjvare atmanam chedvijaniyat ayamasmi the purusha. When this purusha, the person, recognizes that the atma, the self, in fact, is limitless. Kim icchan, what will he desire now? What will he desire? Kasya kamaya, for which desire? In the wake of this knowledge, the desire and desirer, both of them drop off. And that is how there is a final demise of the desire. The final demise of the desire is in recognizing the fact about myself that I do not need anything at all, I am totally sufficient in myself. Then I become totally free from the need and free from the desire. That's how, Jai Shatrum Mahabahu, in the wake of this knowledge, Mahabahu, O mighty Aman, Shatrum Jahi, Kamarupam Shatrum Jahi. So may you destroy this enemy. Until then you are letting, until you are growing out of it. The process gets complete when the enemy is completely destroyed. Kamarupam Durasadam. Don't take it for granted. Here Lord Krishna says, don't be complacent. Don't be inadvertent. Always be alert. So it is said in the 6th chapter, Uddhared Atmanatmanam, Atmanam Avanatmanam Avasadhared. Lift yourself by yourself all the time and never let yourself ever fall down. Meaning never let yourself again get back into the rut. Because if you are not alert, then the mind has a tendency to get back into the rut. It feels very comfortable that way. always be alert.
Durasadam.
That kama, the desire, it becomes subtler and subtler as you go. In the beginning, the desire is a very gross thing. It becomes cleverer and cleverer, subtler and subtler, and you don't even know how it controls you. You know, in what subtle manner this desire controls our mind, how it makes our mind come up with the right argument and convince us that that's the way to do. So how the desire comes up with the arguments and justifies fulfilling desire and makes me feel that, yes, that's right, that is called deluding myself. That's how the desire, by controlling my reasoning, etc., also deludes me. And therefore, say, do not depend, so don't trust this fellow. Don't take him for granted. Don't think that he's gone until he's gone completely. So Viveka Churamani spends a lot of time with this, in fact. Viveka Churamani spends a lot of time. He says, therefore, always be always watchful, watch out for that. Until the karma, the desire, is completely destroyed in the wake of knowledge that I am completely sufficient. When you abide in this knowledge, that desire goes once and for all. Jai Shatrum Mahabaho, Kama Rupam Durasadam, this Shatru, the enemy of the nature of karma, the desire, very difficult to get hold of, very difficult to catch, and very difficult to spot even, very difficult to understand. And so you have to be more and more alert, more and more discerning, to discover these subtler and subtler levels and working of this karma until you get rid of it completely. So this whole last section was in reply to Arjuna's question, what is it that makes me go against my own values? What is it that makes me perform unbecoming actions? What is it that makes me do things against my own wish? What is that impulse? Lord Krishna identified the impulse as kama. How do I know that the kama is there? Because when it is not fulfilled, it results into krodha, the anger. And has given a long discourse on the nature of this desire and what to do with it, concluding how ultimately one becomes totally free. So bondage is nothing but being controlled by the desire. Liberty of freedom is nothing but becoming totally free from that. So how to gain that total freedom? Then also Lord Krishna has discussed here. With that, the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita comes to a conclusion. The last statement also I will read. Please repeat after me. Om Tat Sat. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Karma Yoga Nama Tritiyodhyayah Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja Ahantva Sarva Papebhya Mokshayishyami Masuchah Hari Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om. Announcements? Ashok?
We have Swamiji's talks coming up on from Friday, July 11th to July 13th. I request Narayan to make he has a plan for it. Please come.
Namaskaram. New Jersey Gita Vichara Groups and Arshavidya Gurukulam welcome you to the 8th annual NJ Talk Series by Swami Viditatmananda Saraswati. The topic is Harmonious Living. It's from Friday, July 11th to Sunday, July 13th in the evening. at the Cook College Campus Center in New Brunswick, New Jersey. There's also parallel sessions for children and young adults, ages 6 to 15, on Introduction to Hindu Religion, Culture and Arts, which is based on AVG's Vedic Heritage curriculum. So they are parallel sessions, so parents can bring their children and children can attend the parallel sessions. More information is available on the Arshavidya website, or the flyer is available just outside the lecture hall. All are welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, if you could take, please take. They are working very hard, some of the brochures, and put in the stores nearby your area, like health food stores, Indian grocery stores, libraries. So that's very helpful. Secondly,